Hejsan, hejsan, it's Jorgen here with another episode of Social Media Know-How coming to you from Linkhuman's Global HQ in sunny Finchley, North London. Today, I'm speaking to Steve Raisin of BuzzZumo, all about data-driven content marketing. But first, let's hear it from our sponsor.
SM London Live is back on the 11th of November 2015 and is bigger and better than ever. Did you know that one of our speakers, Helena Langdon from Innocent Drinks, was the brains behind the famous hashtag Dogs at Polling Stations on Twitter? Who knows what barking mad ideas she will come up with at our event on November 11th at Bounce, a venue made for people with serious ping pong skills. Use your exclusive promo code PODCAST to get 10% off your tickets. Visit socialmedialondon.co.uk to find out more.
Okay, let's get on with the show. Okay, so I'm here with Steve Raisin, who is one of the co-founders of BuzzZumo, and he's coming to us today from the English Riviera. How are you doing today, Steve?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very good. So not so sunny here on the south coast of the UK today, but very good.
Oh, dear. Right, so BuzzZumo, if you don't know, it's a social search tool designed to support content marketers, journalists, and anyone interested in finding great content and understanding influencer amplification. And I'd say, Steve, BuzzZumo is probably one of the tools that gets mentioned the most on this podcast, especially by our friends over at HubSpot. So I thought it was just about time that, you know, we had a chat with you. And of course, we did collaborate as well on the Social Media Superheroes ebook a few months ago. It was you guys and Brandwatch and of course HubSpot, which was a great success.
Yeah, that was really successful. No, really good. And the book's still available to download if people want to search for it.
Absolutely. Now, yeah, so I wanted to talk about content and data-driven content marketing today. But could you perhaps tell us first about your role at BuzzZumo?
Yeah, and because the idea was down to Henley and James. There are three of us who own the company primarily. And James and Henley came up with the idea. I helped actually fund it, get the company off the ground. But my role more than anything is, other than annoying James and Henley with lots of ideas putting into practice, is really, I suppose, I look at the marketing side of things. I also look at the data. We have tons of data at BuzzZumo. So you'll find me most days pouring data into statistical packages and looking to see if I can find correlations or what type of data is working for different types of companies. But I then write that up in blog posts, try to share those insights and also form relationships like we did with you guys and with HubSpot, etc. So trying to do joint webinars where we can share interesting things with people. So we have ones coming up with Buffer and Moz and people later this year. So yes, I'm really looking more at the marketing and insights you can gain from the data rather than doing the technical product development at the back end.
Right, you get all the glory. Do all the hard work.
No, they are the bright guys. They're the real drivers of it.
Okay, well, you definitely write a lot. I did some research on your articles, and I could find them in many different places on the internet, which is great. So you're definitely putting the name out there, and lots of webinars and ebooks as well. So, by the looks of things, you're doing a great job. Now, the question for you here is, why is it important to find and identify great content on the internet?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of reasons, really. I mean, the first reason to understand what's great content, you have to define what you mean by that, but often we're looking for content that resonates, that gets linked to, that gets shared a lot. I think as much as anything is just to understand your audience, because you need to understand what content resonates with your audience. If you're writing content, what sort of content engages them? What content do they share? So one of the reasons I think people come to BuzzZumo initially and just do a search for the most shared content on a topic is just to see what type of content is resonating with their audience. And I think that's one of the most important elements of why you should try and find good content. I think the other thing is just to keep up to date with your professional area. I think for all of us, it's a bit scary at the moment. We can all become sort of obsolete faster than we ever could before. The pace of knowledge and new things coming out means that we all go to bed and we wake up sort of dumber than we went to bed as new things have been learned in that time period. So keeping pace is really hard. And so the way I look for great content. I've just searched for what was the most shared content in a topic this week, just so I can make sure I'm keeping pace with it or what's trending in the last few days. So I think understanding what resonates with your audience and also keeping track of things are both reasons to be looking out for great content, really.
And I think traditionally people have gone to Google or Bing or basically search engines to find content. But you talk about something which you call a shift from search to social, and something called Peak Google. Please elaborate.
Yeah, no, there's quite a lot of research done on this, and obviously Google's still huge, but there's a concept like peak oil, it's a maximum oil consumption, things like that. And looking at some of the data, actually, I think it was last year, for the first year, that actual numbers, volumes of Google searches actually just flattened or decreased slightly. And there's a lot of evidence from research from people like Shareaholic, who track about 350,000 sites, and they see where do people visit the sites from. And traditionally, the majority of visits have come from search engines to the sites. Last year, for the first time, more people came from social networks than from search engines. And I think there's an interesting concept, which is the way social's becoming a content discovery layer. I think it varies for all of us, but I know for me personally, I'm probably spending less time inputting terms into Google. I still do it, but I see lots of interesting articles and information come through my Twitter feed or LinkedIn or Facebook, and I click on those articles, I have a read of them, etc. So content discovery, a lot of it's happening through recommendations from friends on social. And so it's not to say that Google's not important because you're trying to find something, you're still going to search there. But as a content discovery layer, social's really growing and it's driving a lot of referrals to sites. And I think we'll continue to see that happen, really. So I say, depends how we all do it or how you do it. But I know for me, I find a lot of interesting articles just appear in my feeds these days and then I click through.
Yeah, absolutely. Twitter can turn into a time bandit sometimes if you click on everything, but
there's a lot of interesting content there that comes through, and people you follow, or particularly on Facebook, you might click through. And there was a good study last year that the New York Times did, which looked at traffic to their sites, and they found in the past people came to the homepage and then they would browse, etc. And what they're finding now is that people visit their content through what they called social side doors, which is people see somebody refer to an article, they click on it, they go across to the site, they read it, they go back to their feed, and so they never see the homepage. And so visitors to homepages of sites are actually declining quite markedly. And so there's all this time spent on designing a perfect homepage, whereas actually people are often going direct to an article and out again. So it's quite interesting in just how people are browsing the web.
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you have any stats or data on what social networks drive the most traffic to websites? I'm guessing Facebook, probably.
Yeah, it's Facebook. Shareaholic probably have the best data, although if you look on our most shared, it's nearly always Facebook shares that dominate. It varies a little bit from topic to topic. If you're looking at leadership and things, LinkedIn's actually very strong. Mm-hmm. But across all topics, it's overwhelmingly Facebook. And interestingly, Facebook is still growing faster than Twitter, even though it's much bigger. It's still growing users faster. So, but yes, when you look at social sharing, Facebook is absolutely dominant.
Right, great. And what's a step-by-step approach to creating really successful content that resonates with your audience?
Yeah, to me, I think obviously the heart of it is about the content itself. What's the nature of the content? And there's been a lot of research done on what sort of content do people share. And people share things if it's interesting to other people, if they think it's helpful to other people, or if they think it really is genuinely entertaining, sort of amusing, etc., or amazing. So we know a bit about why people share. And so successful content has to hit some of those buttons, really. For me personally, if you're in the business-to-business space, I think it's got to be content with some form of value, which might come from research, it might come from sort of insights to work that you've done. But it's really got to have intrinsic value to be shared. No one's going to share marketing collateral, but people might share a case study about how somebody improved their performance by using a particular tool. So I think it's got to be informative and add some real value there. I mean, on the consumer side, there's no question that, content which is genuinely sort of entertaining or amazing, that sort of content, that gets shared really well. So I think the starting point is what's the core of your content about, and does it hit those buttons, really? I mean, once you focus in on that content, then there's all the standard things about, the style in which you write it. Is it really easy to read, easy to scan, the much more conversational style these days? But things like formats really matter as well. You know, whether you do that as an infographic or whether you do it as a how-to post or whether you do it as a list post or a video, formats matter. And what we see is when we research different topics, in some topics, video works really well. In other topics, it doesn't work so well, and actually a list post works much better. And so we find from topic to topic, different formats actually makes quite a difference. We also find things like, and we discussed earlier, but long-form content typically gets more shares and more links than shorter form content. And we've analyzed hundreds of millions of articles to look at that. And on average, that is the case. There are exceptions, but on average, that's the case. And then there are just simple things like headlines. Headlines really matter in terms of driving people through to read content and things like that. So it is worth spending time on, then crafting out your headlines. So all those things go into making a great piece of content. But a great piece of content on its own isn't enough, really. There's just so much content out there. People are not going to find your content. It's sad but true. People just won't find your content, in my view, unless you actively promote it. And I think that's the key mistake often people do make, which is, you create a great piece of content, but you just don't spend enough time promoting it. So you have to create content, but you have to get it promoted to get it out there and to get people to see it and share it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a classic example of that would be a really good YouTube video, which, 10 years ago, if you created something good on YouTube, people will find it. But nowadays, you still have to, only half the work is done when you upload it. Then it's all about promoting it.
I think you're right. I think that's probably a good metric. At least I think you should spend at least the same amount of time on promotion of your blog post or your article as you do creating it, and probably more. It's probably more shifting towards the 60 to 80 of promotion because, people do say if you create good content, people will find it. But unfortunately, I don't think that's true. I think there's so much content. You have to do quite a lot to get it actively pushed out to people. And then if it's good, people will share it. But you've got to get it in front of at least a certain number of people.
Yeah. And I guess you already touched on this a little bit, but what mistakes do you see companies doing in their content marketing efforts?
Yeah, I say we touched on that one. I think first, that point about lack of promotion. I think some people write the content and don't think about promotion. I think it seems to me you have to think about promotion before you even write the post. How are you going to promote it? Why is it going to be interesting? Which forums, which people would share it? So you have to think about promotion from the very first day, I think. And that's a big mistake I think people make. I think the other one is that content marketing at one level is very straightforward, but it's also quite hard work. I mean, it seems to me the key about content marketing is you have to produce good content consistently. And so you have to produce a lot of content on a consistent basis. You can't just do it for 2 or 3 months like a campaign and stop, because you'll then see traffic drop and all those sorts of things. It has to be consistent. And the people who are really good at it, the one thing that they're always good at is consistency. They're always driving regular, good quality content, often on a weekly or a daily basis. And it seems to me that people underestimate how much content you need. And I think it is quite surprising to people. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, on our content, we want to be like, Harvard Business Review. It's really good quality content. But, so it's just we don't produce so much of it, but we want to be like Harvard Business Review. And so I said, well, do you know how many articles a month Harvard Business Review publish? And they were saying, oh, 10, 20. And I said, no, actually, it's 280 on average. Wow. So on average, they're publishing 280 good quality articles. And obviously, big sites are publishing even more than that. And so you do need to publish consistently, but you also need to publish a fair volume of content, I think, to build your brand, for people to become familiar with it. And I think people often don't realize that. I think on the good side is I don't think it's super complicated. I think if you just produce consistently good content on a regular basis, you will be able to build brand, you will be able to build traction, and that will grow. And I think there's loads of evidence for that. But it's just hard work. It's hard work in terms of consistently producing good content that people are interested in. So, so I say that's another mistake, is that people aren't consistent enough, or they simply don't produce good enough content or enough content. They might produce it for a month or 2 months like a campaign, but you have to do more than that, in my view. It's a bit like podcasts and everything else. Once you do them on a consistent basis, people get into the swing with that. I think that's one of the mistakes people make, at least.
Yeah, I remember reading an interview with Pete Cashmore, the founder of Mashable. And when he started out, he was the only blogger for Mashable, when he was doing it out of his you know, his bedroom in Scotland somewhere, he said he would write about 12 posts a day on his own, and that was 7 days a week. And he kept doing that for a couple of years, and then it turned into something.
Yeah, it does take time. And then once you've got it, it becomes like that flywheel effect. Once you've got a lot of good content, then, you know, people will find it, go back to other ones. So, yes, yeah, so I was just having a look. Ooh, it's, yeah, just over, I mean, Mashable published last month just over 2,500 articles. So,
there you go.
So I just literally had a look as we were talking. So, yeah, that's a lot of content they're producing on a monthly basis.
Okay, so if we look at specific forms of content, I know you've done a few research studies, and tell us about how you can write the perfect how-to post.
Yeah, I mean, how-to posts, I think, had a lot of value. Obviously, there are lots of different formats, but how-to posts are good because they, by their very nature, they add value to people. So, you know, how to do something on Google, how to use a particular piece of software or something. So a how-to post intrinsically has some value. So I think people like it. So we pulled data on over 1 million posts recently, just had a look at what makes a really good how-to post and shared that. And I think there are a number of elements to it. I mean, the first thing is, you know, it's got to be a good how-to post. Your how-to post is answering a question, how do I do something? So the starting point is simply, you know, what questions are people asking? So there's no point writing a great how-to post if no one's asking the question. And so you have to understand your audience, and you can do that in lots of ways. And I've worked in a number of companies where you can talk to sales teams and see what questions people are asking the salespeople, or often the support teams, what questions are coming up in support teams and on ticketing desks, etc. But you can also use the web. I mean, I quite like if you search Quora, you can use Google or BuzzSumo to search Quora and see what questions are being asked. So you can literally do site:quora.com/ you know, whatever topic you want, and it will show you some of the recently asked questions. So I think understanding the questions that people are looking for answers to is a starting point. And once you decide on the question you want to answer, my personal view on this is you have to be the best answer. I was talking to Leodon about this, and he was saying you have to be the best answer. And I think he's right on that. Because you don't want 10 posts on how to do something. You want to find the best post. And so if you're going to address that question, you know, how to use Google AdWords, how to do whatever it happens to be, you want to be the very best post in that space, because I think it is a bit of a winner-takes-all game. There might be two or three good posts, but nobody wants another post on it, which is just no, it doesn't add any value to somebody else. And I think Neil Patel does this well in terms of he tries to produce the comprehensive guide to a topic. So his post, you know, his how-to is really the one that covers everything. And there's nothing more frustrating to me than I click on a headline, go through and see, well, this person hasn't added any value to what I knew from other posts. So I think if you're going to write a how-to post, you want to be the best possible answer. So it's got to be very comprehensive. And I think the other thing is to have a very clear structure that works for how-to posts. And there's a whole industry on this called e-learning, where people are looking at on-screen instructional design about how people learn and how you take people through stages. So you get their attention, you explain a concept, you exemplify that concept with an example, you provide other examples, etc., further information, you provide next steps. There is a learning structure that we can learn from when we're writing content. And so I think how-to posts, in particular, you can learn from instructional design principles that are set out in lots and lots of e-learning manuals. So, but I think if you get them right, they're really good and they add a lot of value. So I think that you get a lot of goodwill back if you write a good how-to post. There's a lot of goodwill that comes back to you because you're helping somebody to do something. You're actually helping them develop a skill or improving their knowledge.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you see a how-to post with, which is a great post, but then it has, you know, 300 comments below it as well.
Yeah.
Other people chiming in with their best tips. So, yeah, it can really be a learning center.
Yeah, no, it can work really well.
And another form of content is picture list posts. Tell us what's the perfect content formula for those?
Yeah, I've been trying to coin this phrase, picture list post. I mean, everyone knows what a list post is. It's something that begins with a number. And list posts are incredibly powerful. I mean, I would say I search lots and lots of different topics. I'd say more often than not, list posts are the most shared content formula. People do seem to like sharing stuff that begins with a number. And interestingly, the most common number shared is 10. So there's no surprise there. Sort of a bit of a doe moment. The most common is 10. Although the second most shared number is quite unusual. The second most shared number for list posts across hundreds of millions of articles that we looked at is actually 23. Wow. I can't work out why 23. It might simply be self-fulfilling because sometimes BuzzFeed and people use it and other people copy it. It was the bowling lane in the Big Lebowski. That's the only lane they were bowling was lane 23. So maybe it's that. But yeah, so list posts are so powerful. The other thing that's powerful are images. We know people like images. And the other thing that's powerful is curation. And I think the reason that a picture list post is a sort of perfect piece of content in a way is it combines all three. If you do really good curation, so I don't know, you could be just looking for what are good examples of a small garden design or a homepage or whatever it happens to be. If you do good curation, you create it as a list post, and then you have a nice series of images, so 10 images of the best homepage designs or the best way of doing something. They work really well, and you see those consistency get viral shares. In fact, I was looking the other day, the most shared post on The Guardian, a UK newspaper, which is now more global, the most shared post there was a post on overconsumption in pictures, and it was literally 10 pictures about overconsumption in the world. And so they work really well, because I think it is that combination of it's a list post, it's nicely curated, and it's got images. And so the three together work really well. So I think there's the scope for all of us in all of our work to think of where could we use picture list posts, as they're inherently very shareable.
Right, yeah. And it just struck me that number 23, I think that was Michael Jordan's jersey number as well.
Oh, was it? Oh, I should look at that. That may explain it as well. The power of 23 is interesting because it isn't a number you'd expect as the most shared list post. So, yeah, just if you just go to buzzsumo.com, type in 23, and you'll see all the most shared posts beginning with 23, and there are thousands of them.
Okay, I might write one this week. okay, so if we look at competitors, and how do you track competitor content marketing, and why should you be doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first answer to the first part is it's important to track what your competitors are doing. In any world, we need to track. We don't need to be paranoid about them, but we need to know what's working for our competitors, because we don't know everything. We can learn from others. So I'd like to see what's happening with competitors, what type of content's working for them, what networks are they getting traction on, etc. So I think it is important to track your competitors, and I think most people do it. In terms of how to do it, I think there are a number of things you can do. So I would start, obviously I would probably start with BuzzSumo, but I would do a content analysis report. You can put a domain name into BuzzSumo, and we will show you how many posts they publish for any time period, what their average shares are. So you can instantly see, you can do a domain comparison of you and them. So how many posts did they publish in the period? How many did you publish? What's their average shares? What are your average shares? You'll then also get a breakdown of their most popular content formats. So we'll say that we'll show the average shares for list posts, for how posts, for why posts, videos, etc. So do an analysis of what type of posts they're publishing, which ones are working best for them. You can also see which networks they're getting most traction on. Are they getting most traction on Facebook or is it on Twitter? And it varies hugely from organization to organization. Whilst we talk about Facebook being huge, if you look at somebody like Moz, most of their shares take place on Twitter. So it's interesting to see where people are getting their traction. So I would start with a content analysis report, but I would also just go to BuzzSumo and put in their domain name. You can just get the most shared content for any domain. If you just go to BuzzSumo, type in buzzsumo.com or any domain you want, and we'll simply show you the most shared content for that site. So it's great. You can see the most shared content. You can filter it for the last week, last month, whatever you want. But it does more than that. It shows you the headlines. And then what's even more important is it shows you how it got amplified. So you can also then see who linked to that content, and you can also see who shared it. And I think they're two quite important things in terms of understanding, you know, who's linking to and who's sharing your competitors' content, because they're effectively the people amplifying your competitors' content. And are they sharing your content? If they're not, I find them a really good list of people that I might want to reach out to. So if there's a close competitor and I've got a list there which I can export of, say, 500 people who shared it, they might be people I want to target with a Twitter tailored audience ad, or I might just want to start building relationships with because they've shared something very relevant and I want to sort of engage them in my content. So I would do a most shared sort of content search, but also set up content alerts, and you can set up content alerts again within the tool. So you can set up content alert to see every time your competitor's mentioned. And so we scour the whole of the web. Our alerts tool is probably the best feature of BuzzSumo in my view. So if you put BuzzSumo in as an alert term or link humans, we will alert you every time that's mentioned in any blog post, any piece of content on the web, typically within 5 or 10 minutes of it being published. We're very fast on picking things up. And so you can see when your competitors are being mentioned and whether you should be mentioned. But you can also set up an alert for your competitor's domain. And so we can simply alert you every time they publish new content. Or we can alert you every time they publish more content that gets more than a set number of shares. So every time they publish content that gets more than 100 shares or 1,000 shares or 10,000 shares. So as soon as they've got breakout content, we can alert you. So you can see really quickly and then respond quickly to what they're doing. So in my view, they're the sorts of things you should be doing so that you can understand your competitors' content marketing. What's working for your competitors' content marketing? How often are they publishing? What are the average shares? What are the topics? Who are the top authors? But more importantly, you know, who's amplifying it? And can you use those amplifiers to help amplify your own content? So that's some of the things that I do all the time, looking at competitors.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I'm gonna have to have a look at that because we use Moz a lot and look at how we rank and so on. But we
Moz is great for that. I mean, in terms of just obviously of backlinks and stuff, Moz will give you that and give you the Moz authority in terms of page rank and those sorts of things. But yeah, do certainly look at it. Just type in any competitor name into the most shared box to see their most shared content and who's sharing it. But also do a content analysis report. It's part of BuzzSumo Pro, but there's a 14-day free trial of that as well, so you can just try it, and you just get an audit of a competitor's content marketing. So yeah, definitely try that, and it complements Moz really well. We use both. In fact, we use some Moz data within the tool to show you page authority and things like that.
Yeah, I think Moz provides data to a lot of companies. I think HubSpot, they get all their, well, a lot of their SEO data from Moz as well.
Yeah, we have our own link crawler, so we crawl links. So our backlink data is from our own crawler, but on things like page authority, we use the Moz data.
Yeah, right. And another thing which you've written about is the need for employee personalities in social marketing. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I suppose on social, I mean, I may be atypical, I don't know, but I typically only follow people back on Twitter or follow people on Twitter if they've got a face and they're a human. I like to interact with people, really, rather than brands. I mean, brands do publish stuff and there's obviously people behind brands. But I think there's a very personal side of social, which is about human contact, human interaction. So I think you do need to promote individuals. And I think sometimes those individuals can have as big an impact almost as the brand themselves. And we talked about Moz, but we know someone like Rand Fishkin, for example, at Moz, you know, he probably has as many followers as the Moz Twitter account, I suspect, I don't know. But those people are the personality. They come across and they're people that you can engage with on a very human level. So I think sometimes you see people not making use of real people to advocate on behalf of the brand. Obviously, you need a brand account as well, but I personally think that people are just so important, really. And it's often the people who are the real influencers and the people that people connect with and understand. And I think that's, you'd like to see people share other content, don't you? It's not just sharing work content. Some people just say, I'm in San Francisco today and the weather's X, etc. You know, or I just saw something. It's a very human sort of interaction, and I think that's important on social. So, and what I don't see often with brands is them engaging their staff in sharing and engaging really on social media. And often I'll see a brand and I'll look at something for somebody and it's had, you know, 100 shares or 50 shares. But often you think, oh, you've got 1,000 employees. Yeah. I mean, I did some analysis of the last election, and there's a party over in the UK here called the Liberal Democrat Party. And sometimes the post from their official site was only getting like 30 shares. And then I had a look at it. And virtually none of their own MPs were sharing the content. So you think, well, if your own staff and your own people aren't sharing your content, is anybody else going to share it? And so I think there's huge potential to get staff engaged and to share some of your content and expand your reach. I know there are difficulties sometimes with people engaging on social media and confidentiality and those things. But as a general rule, I think there's huge scope to get staff engaged a lot more and to help promote content and engage with customers. So I think it's just underused at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the technology players, they have clocked onto this. I think LinkedIn have launched something called LinkedIn Elevate. So it's an employee advocacy tool. And I know, I think Hootsuite are working on one, and Sprinklr and what they call Dynamic Signals, I think.
I think a number of the tools are now allowing you to create almost like approved tweets. So you can create a centrally an approved tweet library, and then your staff select from those tweets.
Yes.
So they don't have to publish each one, but they can select a tweet that they like or add a little bit to it. And that makes a degree of sense as well, I think, in terms of having some sort of approved tweets if you're in a sensitive area.
But yeah, I guess it's just facilitating. But at the end of the day, if you create great content, if there had been great content on that Liberal Democrat website, then all the members of the party should have been proud to share it.
They should have been. And I think it's maybe not understanding how social works, etc. But yep. Because it's got more chance of getting out there and people seeing that great content if more people share it, and maybe not recognising the importance of actually having people engage on social and share it, because that's a party with, I don't know how many members they have, but it will be in the hundreds of thousands of party members, etc. So if you can get some of your own people to share it, it will engage. Interestingly, here in the UK, there's a party called UKIP. They did it incredibly well. Their content, on average, on their site, they were getting something like 20,000 shares for a piece of content, wow, which was similar to The Guardian. So, and that was just from their own site. And so they were really engaging people and getting people to do it through social networks. And I think UKIP were quite interesting because they probably did that better than any other party, I think, in the UK general election. And obviously they didn't win lots of seats, but they won over 4 million votes. And this was really, I suppose, their first real election. Yeah, interesting, I think, about how people use social and engage their communities to share that content and get engagement around it. And I think we'll see more of that.
Great. And can you give us any examples, which I guess you have done already, but of people, companies who's got content marketing down to a T?
Yeah, and you asked me not to mention HubSpot, so I won't.
They always get mentioned.
Yeah, they dominate inbound marketing to the extent where, when I do a BuzzSumo search for inbound marketing, I actually do inbound marketing in quotes minus HubSpot.com so that I don't see any of their content. Otherwise, I just get their content. But they are a classic of consistency, etc. There are lots of people doing interesting things. I freaking love science, which is called something else, but I call it I freaking love science. It's an incredibly big viral site, and they just publish short form content, which goes viral. And I'm really interested because long form content typically works better, but they're the exception to the rule, really. But what they do is they find amazing scientific facts, So they'll choose something which is quite amazing, the size of a comet compared to the size of Los Angeles, and they'll compare the two. And it's just often one image with two paragraphs of text, but they just focus on a simple concept, and it's really explained well in an image or a video. And on average last year, I was looking at their content, so they were getting 30,000 shares average per post, so it's huge. I mean, that's equivalent to the BuzzFeed, and even slightly higher, I think. But what they're doing is short-form viral content just by focusing on a single scientific concept and then a single sort of image or video. So I think, the I Freaking Love Science guys just... people love that sort of content, and you only have to see their Facebook page has had 21 million likes. So those guys really got that right about, and I think it's because they, and primarily it's not their content, primarily they're curating content. You'll see the videos come from National Geographic, or they come from YouTube or somewhere, or the image comes from somebody else that they credit. What they're really good at is curating content which will be of interest to people, and it's often about new scientific discoveries or new cancer treatments, whatever it happens to be, or something in astronomy. But they're really good at curating content that people are going to be interested in, so it's often interesting, amazing, etc. I'm really interested in what they're doing on it because it's short-form content, which is unusual in the way it works, but it works fantastically well. So I'm thinking of doing some of my own posts of short-form content like that and seeing whether I can get that to work myself. Other people doing interesting things, I like the way Country Outfitter in the US, they use quizzes to engage their audience, and I think that's really quite interesting. So quizzes get shared a lot. People like to find out what they know or... quizzes about themselves. And so we see quizzes as a really viral form of content. And they're using it really as a brand. So it's often, you know, they're basically saying, you know, we're country people, so they might have a quiz on country music, or do you know this, do you know that, et cetera, about their particular state or locality. And they get huge numbers of shares on that. And it's just interesting the way they use quizzes a lot to engage with their audience. And I think a lot of brands don't use that type of content. So for me, that's another interesting use in terms of different types of content. And I see other people beginning to, I mean, long form content, I would generally say people write long form content. If people are interested in engaging, if it's valuable, people like to get into the meat of it. But I think there are other forms. And so I talked about the I Freaking Love Science guys who do short form with images, Country Outfitter who do quizzes. People like Playbuzz are doing very well with quizzes, but they've also started to focus on interactive content. And I think we may see more interactive content in the future. So a big one that they did recently was just flip cards. Literally, it's an image of an actor from a film. You click on it and it flips around and it shows you what they look like in real life, which is often radically different. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing more interactive content of that type as well. So whether it's quizzes or flip cards, et cetera, I think we're going to see more interactive content that people engage with as opposed to just sort of text format content. I mean, video to a degree can be interactive. But so I see a lot of people doing sort of interesting things, and the technology is going to allow us to do more of that in future. So, I suspect we'll see more interactive content.
More interactive content. Anything else on the horizon if you look, you know, for the next 3 years?
Yeah, got 3 years. in this world. But I don't see the social stuff slowing down. I think people just consistently, it'll just become part of the norm that people use social. I do think we'll see more about social as this, what I would call a content discovery layer. So yes, we'll have search engines, but we're already having very specific types of search engines. So, you go to Airbnb for property, or you go to a different site for a property site for searching for that. So we get different types of search. Facebook search is really interesting and growing. There's a lot of power now in Facebook search, and so you can search stuff that's being shared there. And interesting, there was an article out a few weeks ago saying, I think millennial kids these days get most of their news from Facebook rather than from other sources. And I think the way people almost, I mean, I suppose I consider it like a personal learning network, really. I mean, I don't know about you, but I follow little Twitter lists of people who I think share interesting stuff. And they almost act as my newspaper, my curators. I mean, obviously, The Guardian have editors and they curate interesting content on science or technology. But I can create my own Twitter list or my own other list of people, of 10 people I think are really interested in, I don't know, growth hacking or the sharing economy. And they really become my editors. They curate content for me and I look at what they're sharing. And I don't think I'm unusual in that people starting to almost put together their own little groups of editors via social and then look at stuff that they're sharing, because none of us got the time to see everything. But if I follow 10 experts in growth hacking, they'll probably reshare something if it's important and I need to see it. So they almost act as my editors in a way. And so, yeah, I think this whole era about how social networks work, I think we'll just see it develop. I'm not sure which direction it will go, but I do think we'll see more content discovery via social, whether it's through those peer networks or just through friends. Obviously, search will remain really important. If I want to find a restaurant or anything, that's great. But there are some limitations to Google, dare I say, in the sense that Google's based on authority sites. So, I don't know, you type e-learning into Google, number one will be Wikipedia. I can almost guarantee you, even though search results vary a bit, it'll almost guarantee it'll be Wikipedia number one because it's based on authority. I could click news, but often get a lot of press rubbish in there. You know, if I'm a professional in that space, I might just see what's the most shared content? What are my peers sharing this week about e-learning? Okay, it's not necessarily authoritative content in the same sense that Google ranks it on authority, but it equally has value, I think, to see what my peers are sharing in this space this week or last week. So I think we'll just find different forms of the way people discover content. I think it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years.
Interesting stuff. Right, so how can people learn more and how can they connect with yourself, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, the easy way to learn more about what we're doing is simply to go to the BuzzSumo site or go to the blog, which is just buzzsumo.com/blog, and you'll see results of our research and things that we're doing. Can connect with me just by Twitter. I'm just at Steve Rayson. Or you can just mail me at steve@buzzsumo.com. So there are all ways to get in touch. Just put my name into Google. I'm sure something will come up so you can track me down. But I'm on LinkedIn as well, so do connect to there.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Steve.
Yeah, no problems. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Right, I hope you're buzzing from all of Steve's wisdom. Got any questions or feedback for us? Tweet us at LinkHumans and, of course, use the hashtag SMKnowHow. And before I sign off, we're only 2 months away from SM London Live 2015, and we recently announced that the social media leader of BP, Mark Salt, will be keynoting the conference. If you haven't grabbed your ticket yet, head on over to socialmedialondon.co.uk. And for an exclusive discount, use the promo code PODCAST. That's an easy one to remember. That's it. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you next time.